chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may have in the middle of it. Grass may have in the middle. We come. Grass may have.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Got quite a bit scheduled this evening, and we're going to start off part of the program delves into the Wellcome Trust out of Great Britain. And we have Whitney Webb being interviewed by James Corbett out of Japan. And it's just an excellent interview. And then we're going to be delving even deeper into the Wellcome Trust. It's connected to University of Sussex over in England. And it's about the fourth wealthiest charitable foundation in the world. In fact, you've got Novo Nordisk, number one, with $73.1 billion in endowment. The Bill and Melinda Gates, number two, at $46.8 billion. The Stitching Foundation is $36 billion. That's IKEA, the furniture family. And then Wellcome Trust is $32.9 billion. So the Wellcome Trust is the fourth largest a charitable trust in the world. And so it's something they recently created about a year and a half ago, the Wellcome Leap. And the person just joining that during this period is Regina Dugan. And we're going to have a clip of her being interviewed also. But we're going to start this off with a clip that talks about medical or health tyranny. And it could be very appropriate with all these big foundations, the wealthiest, you could say, charitable trust in the world. You know, actually, they're concerned with contributing to a lot of different health research. And the Wellcome Trust in England is deeply involved with Sussex and many other top universities in Great Britain in delving into very, very deep research. So here we are with Regina. And then we're going to continue to have some extended portions of an interview that she had with James Corbett. So here we go, right off the bat with Whitney Webb saying something about a medical health tyranny. Here we go now.
As I mentioned earlier, so I definitely think it's something that needs to be sort of fleshed out. They need to stop being called this medical charity, because in fact, if you actually go back and you look at how it was founded and created by this pharmaceutical magnate, he wanted it to be both a charity and a business working together. So you have the Wellcome Trust, the charity front, for what are called the Wellcome Foundations, that are for-profit businesses that operate in close connection with the trust. I mean, it's basically a way to have a business look like a charity and to make as much money as possible as a result. And that's just one of many myths that I feel like need to be dispelled about the Wellcome Trust, including its eugenicist links, I think also need to be fleshed out in more detail than I did in that past AstraZeneca AstraZeneca Oxford piece. I said Google because I did an interview on that again and got pulled off of YouTube because I talked about how Google is invested in that vaccine.
Regina Dugan is up next, and she's interviewed on this program, and she talks about the idea of using of mRNA as a mechanism to create a vaccine using these techniques, and how that came about and so forth. And then right after that, I'm going to read portions of an article about the funding that DARPA had of Moderna. But anyway, we have Regina Dugan explaining about how this idea came about of using mRNA, that technology, as a vaccine. Here we go now.
But we can also be very grateful for the difference that a breakthrough makes. And the breakthrough we're talking about here is mRNA vaccines. So let's level set. So the normal time to develop a vaccine is 3 to 10 years. 3 to 10 years, that's the normal time to develop a vaccine to a novel pathogen. We went from virus sequence to first dosing in humans, in the case of the Moderna vaccine, in 63 days. 63 days. It's frankly a stunning scientific achievement. And I think it will one day be known as one of the most important scientific advances of our generation. So you mentioned that we had some involvement at DARPA, and this is true. So this started about a decade ago when at DARPA we made some of the pivotal investments in mRNA vaccine development. And this is how it came about. It's a good study of what it means when you take on these bold, risk-tolerant projects where you're asking, what if it's successful? So let me paint the scene for you. So imagine this nondescript government building, a conference room lined with whiteboards and some of the brightest scientific and engineering minds in the country inside this conference room. And a particular program manager, his name is Dan Wattendorf, who I think is one of the unsung heroes in this story. He's pitching a DARPA program as we would do. We are evaluating new program starts. And so Dan stands at the front of the room and he asks two important what if questions. What if we have a global pandemic and it's a novel pathogen, something we haven't seen before, and the world is shut down and we can't wait years for a vaccine? That was the first what if question. The second what if question was, what if we could use mRNA to encode the protein and have the body produce that protein, generate an immune system response, and get a much faster vaccine candidate? Now, what you have to understand is that at that point, DNA vaccines had been tried. And they produced protein, they just lacked potency. And Dan's key insight was that maybe mRNA could do two things, encode the protein and tickle the immune system enough to ramp up production. And there were a lot of critics. And the critics said, there's no evidence that this will work. And Dan said, there's no evidence that it won't work. And if it does, someday it will matter. Well, that day has come. And that's the history of it. That's the kind of what if bold program that needs to happen. We need more of those kind of breakthroughs. And that's exactly why we formed Welcome League.
That is incredible. And this is some years ago, right? When you were in DARPA.
It was. It was a decade ago. Frankly, it was the most important day of my time at DARPA. I just didn't know it at the time. I think this will become one of the top five contributions that DARPA has made over time, right alongside the internet and GPS. Mm. It was just a remarkable achievement.
That is incredible.
Yeah, they're saying that was incredible. It only took 63 days to develop this. But here we go with Moderna on one of their news releases back on October the 2nd, 2013. And it's entitled DARPA Awards Moderna Therapeutics a grant for up to $25 million to develop messenger RNA therapeutics. And like I said, the article dated October the 2nd, 2013. And a subtitle was Research to Focus on Antibody Production for Immune Defense. Cambridge, Mass., October the 2nd, 2013. Moderna Therapeutics, the company pioneering in messenger RNA therapeutics, a revolutionary new treatment modality to enable the in vivo production of therapeutic proteins, announced today that the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, has awarded the company up to $25 million to research and develop its messenger RNA therapeutics platform as a rapid and reliable way to make antibody-producing drugs to protect against a wide range of known and unknown emerging infectious diseases and engineered biological threats. And that's just the end of the first paragraph. So you could say that, yeah, it took 53 days by way, yeah, say, again, I said 63 days by way of a 8-year-old funding by DARPA up to $25 million of Moderna. So this 63 thing, today thing, is just, they're just hustling us. This is a medical tyranny, health tyranny that's developed from the early beginnings of eugenics movement in this country. And that's what we're up against now. This Welcome Leap, okay, company, now headed up by Regina Dugan, they have different programs. You can go into their site, and we'll have a click-off on our site so you can easily find it and do some research. But they have one program called 1KD program, and it's for young children from almost infancy to the first 1,000 days, a little over 3 years. And they say in there that they want to do a lot of data and research on young children to see how they think and stuff like that. And that's not for health purposes. This is just for total control. And they want to know how to affect young children to program them and make them into little zombies and little slaves, you know, to the New World Order. That's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about these gigantic pharmaceuticals and trust and charitable trust and all this wanting to build something that's therapeutic to the world health community. Otherwise, it's something that's not even close. Now, here's what Whitney Webb had to say about this program for young children. Here we go now with what she had to say.
But the fact that they are targeting children specifically and plan to target them in a massive way within 10 years is just stunning. And I think shows that these people really think they cannot be stopped. And it's really, you know, I would argue up to concerned parents and concerned citizens to protect the most vulnerable from this type of invasive technology.
Next, we have Whitney Webb with James Corbett on an extended clip here of that interview that they had together recently. And they really delve into several areas. And they bring this Harari person up as a major personality speaking for, we think, the deep state, the New World Order, the world elite, you could say. But anyway, he did speak recently, about a little over a year ago. We're going to play a clip after she expands a little bit on that, and then we'll actually play the clip after she talks about Harari of exactly what he said at Davos 2020. So here we go with Whitney Webb, and interviewed by James Corbett.
As we mentioned earlier, a lot of these players have ties to the World Economic Forum, of course. The most important speech that I've seen at Davos recently in terms of what's coming took place in January 2020. It was Israeli historian Yuval Noah Harari, a close friend of Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook, whose work is heavily touted by Barack Obama and very much loved by the WEF crowd. He's given this fawning introduction. I believe her name is Orit Gadiesh, who basically runs Bain Capital right now. You know, he's very much praised by the elite. And in this speech, he basically talks about how there's going to be an inevitable rise of what he calls digital dictatorships and data colonialism, and that this development throughout the world will become irreversible once the majority of the population starts wearing wearables that can interrogate their brain state and their thoughts and what they're thinking. And the example he gives is, okay, so you're in this society, this digital dictatorship, and the great leader, Big Brother, whatever, is giving a speech, and you can outwardly look happy and be clapping and just look just like you're supposed to look, but the wearable will know that you inside are angry and unhappy and have the wrong emotions and the wrong thoughts in relation to that speech. And these are his words. In the next morning, you'll be in the gulag as a result of that. And, you know, the WEF elite, the Davos crowd are there clapping. He openly implores them at the end of that talk that the people in this room, the World Economic Forum members, take hold and develop this technology for their use. Otherwise, the rats might get a hold of it. Very jarring statement to make. I would encourage you to go and watch it so you can see the context and the other ways in which he talks about the quote-unquote rats and what you think that may mean, among other things. The whole speech is very instructive, but it's very telling that the elites that are driving these agendas know what will happen once the masses start to wear wearables. And as was recently covered in another investigation on Unlimited Hangout, Jeremy Lofredo, who wrote that piece, pointed out that there's, several companies now, including in the U.S., health insurance companies and life insurance companies that will give you benefits if you wear a wearable, a Fitbit for now, or Amazon's Halo, one of these that are currently marketed for fitness. If you wear one of these, you'll get, your life insurance or health insurance plan, you'll pay a reduced premium. How long until that's segued into perhaps Medicare for All, something that people in the U.S. on the left have been fighting for a long time. Of course, they'll never get that from the U.S. establishment, not unless they're the people that get free health care are willing to give up their complete privacy and biometric data in exchange, which is something I could actually see happening given the nature of, Biden's chief scientific advisor, this effort to create HARPA and usher in this age of predictive precision medicine in the U.S. I would encourage Medicare for All advocates to look quite closely at the developments here in that event, because what better way to get mass adoption than to make it free, right? So that's probably how they will seek to do that, not unlike what they've done with COVID vaccinations, probably the first time in U.S. history that I can think of where something was made completely free to everyone, and you get a free donut, and you can do it at McDonald's, and you get all this free stuff. That's not very common in the U.S., so it could easily happen with the adoption of wearables. And if so, as Harari says to the web crowd, digital dictatorship, it's irreversible. Once it's here forever.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that represents the carrot side of the equation. Oh, we can reduce your premiums. Come on, it'll be great. But of course, there's always the stick as well. And that's, I think, the thing which I understand. In retrospect, it all falls into place, but the thing that I don't think I would have predicted sitting there in 2019, thinking about it as hard as I could, I don't think I would have predicted that of course they needed some sort of ginned up health crisis in order to propel us into the next stage of the transhumanist agenda. Of course, that is exactly what they need to break down that biological barrier that we have to start implanting their technologies in us. And of course, they're going to call it a vaccine or whatever else. And of course, it's going to be used as the thin edge of the wedge to start the transformation. And it just makes so much perfect sense now that I see it lining up. But I didn't put it together like that beforehand. And obviously these people did. They've been thinking about this for a very long time.
A very long time. It's true. For me also in 2019, a lot of this I wasn't necessarily expecting. A lot of developments going on that year I wasn't aware of until COVID-19 hit, and a lot of our attention was directed towards these fields. But the more people like you and me and several others have looked at this, the more clear it's become that these are agendas that have been decades upon decades in the making. It's no coincidence that you see a lot of big time players from past bio-alarmism incidents, whether it's the avian flu scare of the Bush administration, the anthrax attacks, among other things, and things going, even decades before then, again, popping up and being influential in policies today now. It's quite jarring, frankly. But what is important now, of course, is that we can see, now that we're wise to the game, as it were, we can see from this point where they want to take it. I think Welcome Leap is an instructive example of that. And I think also the fact that they're just starting up shows that this technology, despite, Black budget research programs with the military and intelligence. Obviously, they have advanced technology we don't know about, and probably that's true in several of these fields that we've been talking about. But the fact they need something like Welcome Leap and they need this technology to be adopted and tested on potentially thousands, tens of thousands of people shows that they can't do it at those, you know, black budget research sites alone. They need a significant contingent of the human population to use as data points for AI and other things in order to take this agenda further. And I think this is really important for people that plan to resist this agenda because it shows that our consent matters and that this can be stopped. Their agenda, in their end game, they often like to cast as inevitable. There's nothing you can do, little peon. You may resist, but we will defeat you. You know, I think Welcome Leap shows that this is not the case. And I think people really need to take that to heart. There's still a lot that can be done to derail and stop this agenda. And I think Welcome Leap's programs and maybe some of these academics, if you contact them and explain politely where this agenda, what this agenda means to you, you know, and give them some pushback. You know, I don't think that these individuals are expecting that. Academics are usually very much isolated in their ivory towers of academia, as it were. Same with a lot of these think tanks and groups like the Wellcome Trust. You know, because usually it's politicians that get the brunt of that type of pushback, or maybe even corporations at some times, but usually these groups do not, and they're really intimately involved in advancing it to a big degree. So I think, you know, it's time to start thinking about how we can show groups like this that the public is not down for the next steps of this agenda. And it's really important, I think, for people to not lose faith that there really is an opportunity here to stop these agendas from advancing to the point where they want to take them.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So let's hone in on this. This is not 2010. It's not even 2019 or 2020. This is 2021. We're not just simply documenting and detailing the beast. We are actively resisting it and hopefully stopping it in its tracks, or at the very least derailing this agenda. So of course the question always comes back to what we can do. And as always, I think the very first ground level of this is awareness.
Broadcasters all over the world are working to get out the word about really what's happening. It's not a 1984 novel anymore. It's not Brave New World or Return to Brave New World. It's really unfolding on us, and they're going through with this. They're going to create a world tyranny, and they're going to use this pandemic and other things. Possibly false flag operations to scare and to bring this about through invoking in the public, the world community, fear. So here's what Harari said at Davos back in 2020, right from his words. And, of course, you heard the interpretation that Whitney Webb had, and she was right on top of it. But here's the actual clip of him saying and making that statement about wearables and the way people will conform, otherwise they'll be in the gulag. And the gulag refers to what Solzhenitsyn wrote about the Russian gulags, which were prison camps for the political prisoners, and they had criminals in there too. But mainly it was the imprisonment of political prisoners. So here we go with this short clip right from Harari's lips. Here we go now.
Just imagine North Korea in 20 years, when everybody has to wear a biometric bracelet which constantly monitors your blood pressure, your heart rate, your brain activity, 24 hours a day. You listen to a speech on the radio by the great leader, and they know what you actually feel. You can clap your hands and smile, but if you're angry, they know you'll be in the gulag tomorrow morning. And if we allow the emergence of such total surveillance regimes, don't think that the rich and powerful in places like Davos will be safe.
So they are building a tyranny, and we're their puppets, we're their slaves, we're their dupes to fearmonger us into compliance with this system of rule. And so this is what we have to wake up to and awaken from this, come out of this mesmerized delusional state. And here we have a clip of an interview that Christine Lagarde, a director of the International Monetary Fund, had with Harari, and they're talking about the power over the ages, over the different 19th, 20th, and 21st century. And he said the power of data manipulation and control is the new power base. And this was very, very interesting. So here we go with this little short clip between Christine Lagarde and Harari.
And this is the situation we are here now. The main difference is that in the 19th century and in the 20th century, the big threat, if you were left behind, the biggest threat you faced was exploitation. They will conquer you and exploit you. In the 21st century, there is actually a worse fate, potentially a worse fate awaiting you. You will not be exploited. You will simply become irrelevant. And being irrelevant in many ways is much worse than being exploited. When you're exploited, at least they need you. When you're irrelevant, that's much more difficult to struggle against.
That takes us to the data, doesn't it?
Yeah, that takes us in the direction of discussing what's happening to the data.
Yeah, what's happening to the data. And you, I think you say in your book that who owns the data owns the future.
Mm-hmm.
And those happy few who own the future, the data owner and the data processors and the data miners and all the rest of it, will have a very happy life, whereas the rest of the others will be this precariat out there, eventually useful a little bit, but irrelevant most of the time. Unless they're given that universal basic support so that they're kept happy and quiet.
That's one scenario, again. We are not sure. But what we can say with far greater certainty is that data is becoming maybe the most important resource of the 21st century. The same way that land was the most important resource in ancient times, and machines and factories were the most important resource in the 19th and 20th century. And at present, we see that almost all the data of humankind, both on really on the level of the human body and the human brain, it's being concentrated in a few places. And most of the world, you can say, is already in the process of being kind of data colonized,
mm-hmm.
that the data is flowing from all over the world to a few hotspots.
Which one would those be? California?
The usual suspects.
So California, Israel?
East Asia, a couple of places in between. Bangalore, a couple of places maybe in Europe. And in much of the world, they are just giving up their data for free. Or maybe in exchange for funny cat videos. I'm not sure if this is like completely free.
Google would argue with you vehemently that it's not for free and you're getting a lot of services for free. Mm-hmm. Therefore, that's a consideration for access to your data.
Yeah, the question is whether you get a fair, you know, what is the fair price is one of the biggest questions in economics ever, and we are not going to settle it here. But there is a huge suspicion that what you're giving up, it may be worth far, far more in the long run than what you're getting in exchange. So it's done voluntarily in most places, in most countries. But this is also largely because people don't realize the importance of what they are giving. And one of the problems is I don't have like this is the solution. Okay, let's have government regulation of data. Let's nationalize the data.
Are trying to do that with GDPR. Not dealing with the property of data, but at least dealing with the more philosophical question about who owns it, who has privacy, who has the right to either give it away or retain it.
There are many plans and models today for how to do it. What we lack is experience. History teaches us is that trying to regulate something like that is going to be quite complicated and mistakes will be made. And we are not sure what is the best way to do it.
And, you know, when you try to regulate the ownership of land, you have thousands of years of experience going back to ancient Mesopotamia and the ancient Chinese civilization, and you can learn. And you have a couple of centuries experience in regulating the ownership of machines and factories and all that. But we have very little experience in regulating the ownership of data. So yes, it's the debate is starting. All kinds of experiments like what is being now done in Europe. This is beginning.
Yeah.
But we are working with a much, much shorter time frame than before. We can't go back to the past. There is almost no record of something like that. And we need to do it very quickly because the development of this technology is going at an accelerating rate. And if we or some of us get it wrong, we may not get a second chance to try again a different talk. If you're left behind in the AI arms race, then maybe you never get a second chance.
That's not very reassuring.
Well, as Harari was just saying, if you get behind in the AI race, artificial intelligence race, then you may not get a second chance. So they're laying out some really, really big deadlines. And right now, the 2030 deadline seems to be, you know, the really, really hard deadline, a drop-dead deadline that everyone is sort of focusing in, that by 2030, they ought to have this tyranny in place and us locked down for good. So that's something for us to resist and work against. But coming up, we've got an extended conversation with Stu Peters and Dr. Ruby. And they talk about this new company, Novavax, that's developing a new a vaccine. So it's supposed to be the newest, latest, greatest thing. So we'll put that up in a second. But we're going to have a promotional audio put out by Novavax, sort of explaining some of their deals. But we'll put up on our site all these click-offs to the different companies. So you can not only listen to our program this evening, but you can go in on our thesecrettruth.com. You can go into thesecrettruth.com and listen to that. And then I'll make some announcements at the end of this first hour also. We can't forget Mike Lindell. Man, he's a go-getter, fine, upright, outstanding person working there on the 10th, 11th, and 12th. In August 10th, 11th, and 12th, in Sioux Falls with a cyber symposium. He's going to expose what really happened on the 2020 election. So anyway, we'll say more about that towards the end. But right now, we've got Stu Peters up with Dr. Ruby talking about this Novavax and other implications of what's going on here.
I've been actually getting slides for many weeks now from all kinds of technicians and experts in blood analysis looking at the physical aspects of the blood. But recently there was a physician from the UK, and since then I have actually spoken with him, and because since he first put this information out, he began to get, I guess, threatening phone calls and other types of communication. He asked me not to use his name, but I could use his first name, so his name is Dr. Philip. What he provided on the air, and which we've provided to your producers today, is a side-by-side. This one particular slide I thought would be easy to help people understand what he's been finding. And he's been finding them predominantly in patients who have gotten the Moderna shot, but certainly all of the patients who have had a shot of one company or another, he is seeing their blood look like this. So on your left-hand side of the screen, you see there are these very nice plump round structures. Those are your red blood cells. There's a lot of iron in the middle. The responsibility among many is to carry oxygen to your cells. So it's just a, you know, they're nice shape. They're very consistent. There's a lot of space between them so they can move freely. On your right, what you see is what Dr. Phillips saw. under patients, these are blood smears on patients who have had an injection from one company or another. Now, what you see in those clumpy areas, those are formerly red blood cells. They have no longer have that nice, round, smooth shape. They start to aggregate or clump together. Eventually, they clump so tightly, Stu, that you can barely make them out as red blood cells. Now, the structures that are kind of gold and long in there, he described them as tubular. He said that they were open tubes on either end when he increased the magnification. And he said that some of the distorted, damaged blood cells were kind of trapped inside of there. He didn't know what these gold structures are, but they do kind of look remotely like the Spanish researchers who, when they first looked under the regular microscope, you saw these long structures of this shape and folded over. And so they look very similar to that. He is just blown away, Stu. He's also said, though, these patients are very symptomatic. They're sick. They have blood clots. They have difficulty breathing. They have no energy anymore. They look like they're slowly dying. And here's the tricky part, and I've been raising this issue for quite some time now. When he goes to do regular blood studies like blood counts, white blood count, red blood count, types of blood cells, and chemistries like, you know, sodium, potassium, chloride, things like that, the tests are all positive. And so I asked him yesterday what he made of that. This is a 40-year physician who's a surgeon, who's seen thousands and thousands of patients, and he doesn't have a clue. Stu, he said, he's never seen anything like it before.
So this guy, who we can only refer to as Dr. Philip, he brings these slides forward, and that looks like that picture that we're looking at right there, what you were referring to as folded over or long sheets, is what the Spanish researchers, those La Quinta Columna people, exposed is graphene oxide, a toxic poison inside of the Pfizer shot. And they came out and said, yep, we found it in AstraZeneca as well. And now we're hearing unconfirmed reports, which I don't know if you have them or not today, but Moderna as well. And we can assume that this graphene oxide is in all of these things. But
yes,
this Dr. Philip.
I was going to say, you just hit on something. There's a new report on a Moderna vial that is about to come out in writing, but it is in the public domain now, that some Argentinian researchers examined, did the same steps of examination, according to the report. They went through regular microscope, and then they went to electron microscope. They found the same percentage of graphene oxide in the Moderna vial as the La Quinta Columna researchers from Spain found in the Pfizer vial. There's also been a report of an AstraZeneca vial from some researchers in a different area of Spain, but we haven't gotten those two written reports yet.
Which brings me to my point, or my question, I guess, that I have for you, is you mentioned that Dr. Philip only wants to be referred to by his first name because he brings this stuff forward, and now as a result of this exposure, his life has been threatened.
It seems so. It seems so.
And that's being reported by him to you. That is really alarming. Now, we keep talking about and referring to La Quinta Columna, Spanish this, Argentinian that. Why can you speculate? Why is nobody in the United States taking these vials, inspecting them, and reporting these things widely here?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I am really surprised that we don't have a huge collection of vials that have been taken for examination and that we're not hearing anything yet. It could be that perhaps there are researchers or scientists in the United States that are looking at these and they want to look at a lot of them before they come forward with their findings. I also think it might be kind of dangerous for people to come forward, as we've seen with Dr. Philip. He said he's been getting really nasty communications, emails. They've doxed him in England. He's gotten death threats. I didn't get any more detail than that, but that was certainly enough. I felt very badly for him. He's just trying to share this information with people. As a physician, he said, I have a hard time getting to other physicians to be able to talk about it. Apparently in the UK, it is now a crime to make, as in his words, to make the government look bad. And he could go to jail. He's very frightened he'll be arrested and taken to jail.
Wow. Absolutely insane. So I guess I can understand that, you know, people are scared. But there comes a point in time where you're talking about billions of lives globally at stake here. Now, as the findings come forward on Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, this hesitancy or this resistance is going to continue to increase. And I'm not buying the propaganda that two-thirds of this country are inoculated. I'm just not buying that. But as this thing ramps up, now they're going to bring in something and repackage it and call it safe, a safe alternative. That might be Novavax, and we're going to talk about that next as the Alex Jones Show continues with Dr. Jane Ruby. FreeWorldNews.tv, the Alex Jones Show. My name is Stu Peters. That was my site right there, StuPeters.tv. I'd be honored if you'd come over and check me out if you haven't already. One of those articles that you just saw up there, we were just talking earlier today about the pingdemic. And this is really something that you should pay close attention to, this government tracking on your cell phones. You don't have to sign up for a service. You don't have to download the app. You don't have to give your cell phone carrier permission to allow this tracking. The government is going to track citizens, notify them if they have been in contact with somebody with the dreadful virus, and order them to immediately quarantine, lock down for a period of, I believe it was 10 weeks to two, or excuse me, 10 days to 2 weeks. And if you don't, there's going to be sanctions. There's going to be fines. There's going to be jail time. Unbelievable. And so the same thing is happening here, which then, of course, is going to cause the panic, which is going to send everybody out in anticipation of these lockdowns. If you've been around somebody who's got the fearful man-engineered virus that was intentionally released to incapacitate the world and steal your freedoms, force complete subservience to a global cabal, and it's going to force these people into the grocery stores or to the gas stations to stock up on things, and you're going to see the depletion of all of the natural goods and the foods and the things that we need in order to survive. Alex Jones talks about it all the time. This is actually happening in the real world. And so, you know, for all of the fact checkers, for all of the conspiracy theorists, and we know where the fact checkers come from. I mean, we just did a big deal at Lead Stories, you know, who they're funded by, who they're in bed with. We know who they are. But that's why they're able to censor language of people like Alex Jones, who once again has been proven right. And once again, the tinfoil hat comes off. And once again, here we are talking about the actual reality of a global takeover, Marxism being introduced into the United States in a time where you never thought that this would happen. And so Dr. Jane Ruby is joining us. We showed what happens to your red blood cells, what's happening to your blood. We have talked about graphene oxide. Now it's in the Moderna shot. It's confirmed. We don't know why they're not doing this here in the United States. Your bravery, which is why I continue to have you back, because your bravery it should be noted as heroic and nothing less than that. Extremely patriotic, the fact that you are willing to risk it all to come forward. When we're talking about a doctor now in Argentina who won't even allow his last name to be used, but that cloak has to come off. People can no longer hide. If you really want to acknowledge that we're in a time of war, certainly the information war is on, but it's more than that. If you really want to acknowledge that, you can't fight this from the cloak of a blur or an altered voice. And although, be it, I respect whistleblowers, we now need to, in these meetings with school boards, parents need to take off their masks. They need to do these interviews right in the wide open and come out and say, nope, we're not going to provide proof of inoculation. Nope, these are dangerous. They're killing people. Here's the science. Here's the evidence. Here's the patents dating back from 2002. Here's the proof that this thing was engineered. Here's the proof what it does to your body. Here's the proof that graphene oxide is in it. And the researchers here in the United States need to dive into this. No more of this nonsense. We're going to wait for this and wait for that. Look, the proof is in the pudding. It's there. We showed what it's doing to your blood. And now they're going to introduce alternatives to these death clot shots that have pilots, you know, potentially will be crashing planes. I mean, this whole thing is ridiculous. And so now they're going to be, it's very scary. And now they're going to be introducing this Novavax. You told me first about it. I had not yet heard of it, which means I can speculate that there are hundreds of millions of people around the world who have not yet heard of this new company, or this company, not new company, but this company that has been newly made public, this Novavax, is going to have a vaccine that it doesn't act like Pfizer. It doesn't act like Moderna. It doesn't act like AstraZeneca or Johnson & Johnson. No, no, no. This is something completely different. Dr. Jane Ruby, what is it?
Yeah, Stu, the word is going around that this is, quote, an old-fashioned type of vaccine. It's actually not. I understand that people are still fearful of this variant story, but everybody has to remember the PCR test is completely incapable of detecting viral load, which means it cannot tell you if you're ill. Secondly, since the SARS-CoV-2 virus in its whole entirety has never been isolated, how do you even begin to diagnose a variant of that virus? But let's enter the stage with Novavax. Novavax is the name of a company that is in the D.C. area, Gaithersburg, Maryland. They do have some track record in developing vaccines. But before everyone gets excited, wants to go out and celebrate, this is really, I'm going to give you the bottom line and then I'm going to explain how it happens. This Novavax actually gets you to the same exact place, which means that your body is going to be flooded with toxic synthetic spike proteins that are made from a collection of different a genetic material from different cell lines. Here's what they do, Stu. They inject into moths what's called a baculovirus. This is a virus that doesn't infect humans, but it is able to infect insects and arthropods or spiders. And so what they do is they inject these moths with a baculovirus. Now, the baculovirus is the transporter for the mRNA material, the genetic material, that forces the moths, sound familiar, to make spike proteins. Now watch, that's not the end of the story. They then extract the spike proteins from the moths. They stud them into a nanoparticle, starting to sound even more familiar. And then they put that's what they end up injecting into you, but not before they add another chemical substance called saponin, which apparently comes from a plant. It's a little bit of a surfactant or what we would call a soap-like material. It's highly irritating to the human body, and it was supposedly, theoretically added so that it would sort of spark your immune system to react a little more robustly. And so basically what we're seeing here is, you know, Novavax injects DNA for spikes into moths, right? They make a ton of spikes. They then take the spikes, put them in a lipid nanoparticle, and then they take that material and they put that in a vial, and that's what you're getting as your alternative, if you will, to what we already have now, which is a nightmare. It's the same nightmare, Stu. It's just a different mechanism of delivery.
So what about symptoms? You know, obviously, if the mechanism is relatively similar, if it gets you to the same place, in other words, producing spike proteins, you know, all of these different things, is it safe to assume that symptomatically people who subject themselves to a Novavax would more than likely be experiencing, you know, menopausal women would start bleeding, infertility might occur, random things happening with a menstruation cycle or menstrual cycle, guys experiencing, you know, hangover type headache symptoms. I mean, are these, how about tremors and magnetism and all this other stuff? I mean, are these going to be the similar symptom groups? Would you speculate?
Well, I think there's going to be that and more. And the concern I have about more nightmare, more problem, is that in this particular virus, if you really drill down into their preclinical work, they've actually added an HIV, it's called the HIV glycoprotein 120 prion. Prions are very dangerous protein-like materials, Stu. They can jump from person to person. They have a particular affinity for brain tissue. And in fact, in the animal studies with the Novavax trial, you can see information that shows that in less than 2 weeks, 95% of the mice died. And almost 100% of the macaque monkeys died. And when they did the autopsies on their brains, they found this really soft, mushy, finding. And what it looked like to them is exactly like something called spongiform encephalopathy. And for nerds out there or medical experts, you'll recognize that term as mad cow disease. So you're talking about, then they also went on to find what's called Lewy bodies, which is found in, that's a physical structure that is found heavily in people with advanced dementia stages. So when I say there could be more nightmare coming, I don't understand why these, you know, incredibly poisonous, toxic things were added to something that is supposedly supposed to give you some protection or immunity. And I've said from the beginning, they're not vaccines. Please just wait. Everything keeps unfolding.
Dr. Jane Ruby, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you being here. Mad cow disease.
Now that we're going to state some closing comments about, oh yeah, there is something that I want to cover before we close down this program. And the Biden administration has decided not to investigate the Democrat governors of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and New York over claims their COVID-19 policies led to the deaths of thousands of vulnerable people in nursing homes. So that just came out today, so they're not going to go after those. Now, there was one other, and that was quite a disappointment for Janice Dean up there in New York City, whose in-laws, both her mother-in-law and her father-in-law, passed away in retirement homes due to possibly Governor Cuomo's policies concerning moving back into those people that were COVID-19, which they should have never done. But anyway, want to, of course, reiterate again Mike Lindell's Cyber Symposium, August 10th, 11th, and 12th in Sioux Falls. And he's going to get into this election and take it apart and show us and prove to us. He has a $5 million bet out that if anyone can disprove what he's saying, he'll pay him $5 million. But anyway, Mike Lindell's a fine person, a stand-up Christian, a good man. And he's to be supported, that's for sure. One of the things that, you know, they're always asking about facts on this COVID-19 epidemic and all this. And I seem to run across some FAA, some Federal Aviation Administration, you could say statistics on unruly passengers. And the FAA investigates unruly passengers incidents that airline crews report to the agency. The data below reflects all cases the FAA investigated that cited violations of one or more FAA regulations of federal law, okay? And it has down here year to date the numbers current as of July 20th, 2021, okay? And basically it says that there were 3,509 unruly passenger reports. They alluded 2,605 to mask-related incidents. And then investigations initiated, they have as 581. And then their enforcement cases initiated were 87. Now, when we go back to last year's statistics on all investigations, for the year 2020, we only had 183, you could say for that whole year, that were just, you know, investigations. We have 581 already, and this is, we're a little over half of the way through here. So what I'm maintaining here, in this report, and citing this report, it's FAA, this is their statistics, is that are people getting on the plane? We know they're alluding some of these unruly passenger reports to people fighting about the mask, you know. And I think there's been young children that that were on there that got caught up with their parents about slipping down off their face, 2 or 3 year olds. And we can all always understand those kinds of things. But with the figures that we have here compared to what we normally would have in a normal year, it's way, way too much. So are the COVID-19, either the vaccines or the virus itself affecting people in such a way that's causing some kind of dementia or some kind of a problem, in a cognitive problem where they're getting mixed up on the plane, or there might be some kind of hallucination or some kind of a mix up with the flight attendants where it's spilling over into an incident that you could label as an unruly passenger? Well, I don't know. So I think we need to look at that further. Now, getting back to what our program was about today, is that this Wellcome Trust is out of England, out of Great Britain. It's tied into the real medical, you could say, research industry over there. And it's tied to Sussex, okay? The University of Sussex has a COGS unit over there that does cognitive research on cognitive psychology. And I've been looking at that for about 20 years or more. Actually, I think 1995, I'd say 5 years plus 21, 26 years, I've been looking at Sussex and so forth and other. But you have in Great Britain, in Britain, you have a tremendous research, you could say, project unending, it seems like, through their major universities, and Sussex was one of the cornerstones of some of this. That's why the Wellcome Trust is connected with funding, you know, projects at Sussex in a real big way, in the hundreds of millions of dollars over a number of years. Now, the Wellcome Trust, being the fourth largest charitable trust in the world, did give $300 million to fund and the startup of the WelcomeLeap.org. And if you go down there to this WelcomeLeap.org and drill down into there, you're going to find and be really surprised at what is there. You have, okay, this is WellCome, then LEAP, .org, okay? And you're going to be really surprised at what you're going to find. They say right on their homepage, the Leap builds bold, unconventional programs and funds them at scale. Well, one of their programs is for young children, okay? We're pleased to announce the selected performers, and then they list people that they're funding. But then they start describing this program. We know that what a difference a day makes. The first 1,000 days can make all the difference to a child's start in life. And they put forward this idea that they're out here for our benefit, okay? That's a big hustle, in my opinion. And what they're out there to do is to study and see how they can control and affect and influence and program young children and keeping them, you could say, in line, you know, in compliance with the rule. You know what I mean? The rulers, you know. And this is basically what is going on these programs, is that they've used drugs in the past and the psychology of the media, the propaganda that's disseminated. Look at America today. How many of these big newspapers can you trust anymore? Plus, these social networks are acting to collect data, and then they're keeping us off and knocking people off. They're trying to get out information, whether it's on this vaccine or the virus or whatever, and they're being knocked off those every day. So this is no longer a 1984 novel, people, okay? And when I say people, I'm not speaking down to you. I've been at this for 40 years, so I've studied in depth many of these topics, and so I'm not just a newbie to explaining this thing is really going down now, and I don't see I see the danger out there, and we've got to really wake up and to become really woke. You can say this woke thing, that's just a rabbit trail they've created to divert us away from really waking up. That's why they want to get their hands on our young children, so they can keep them in a sleep state, in a mesmerized, programmed state of slavery, you know. But anyway, I want to thank each and every one out there that listened to our program, and we're going to try to help Mike Lindell and others, you know, free us from this, the vice, you could say, of this tyranny. And like Whitney Webb said in one of her interviews, they're building a health tyranny, you know, a medical health tyranny. It started out with the pharmaceuticals and the allopathic medicine, you could say, techniques. But anyway, I want to thank each and every one of you, and God bless you and keep you, and good night, and we value every person.